Special funding for the podcast of On Point is provided by Boston University School of Law, dedicated to excellence in teaching and to preparing lawyers for global challenges.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. In the heart of the last debate, there it was again last night, the energy issue, joined at the hip by its twin challenge, the environment and global warming. John McCain and Barack Obama were ready. Here's McCain with his all-of-the-above approach.
We have to have nuclear power. We have to stop sending $700 billion a year to countries that don't like us very much. It's wind, tide, solar, natural gas, nuclear, offshore drilling, which Senator Obama has opposed.
And Obama on energy security and the economy.
I think that in 10 years, we can reduce our dependence so that we no longer have to import oil from the Middle East or Venezuela. I think that's about a realistic time frame. And this is the most important issue that our future economy is going to face.
This hour, On Point, basic issues on the home stretch to November 4th, energy and the environment. We'll talk with top energy advisors to Barack Obama and John McCain. In just a moment, we'll be joined by top energy advisors to McCain and Obama, James Woolsey and L.G. Holstein. Joining us first from Washington is Keith Johnson, longtime energy reporter for the Wall Street Journal. He writes the journal's Environmental Capital blog. Keith, welcome.
Hi, Tom.
Give us, in a nutshell, if you can, because this is a big, sprawling scene on energy and the environment. Is there a fundamental difference between these two candidates' basic approach?
Well, I mean, I think there is. You just played the clip from the debate last night that had the all-of-the-above quote again, and as well Senator Obama's call for reduced dependence. But, I mean, you hear this a lot in all of the debates from Senator McCain. We favor an all-of-the-above approach, and yet two things sort of really always get the accent there, which is a massive increase in nuclear power and more domestic oil production, sort of the drill, baby, drill mantra. And from the point of view of Senator Obama, the emphasis has always been more on renewable energy, alternative energies, efficiency, conservation. But I think with both campaigns, the big question now is, you know, how does the economic turmoil and the financial market turmoil make these things more or less viable? You know, where do you get the funding for these big plans?
And we're talking very, very big plans here. Keith Johnson, please stick with us in this hour as we listen to the top advisors from each camp on energy and the environment. Let me introduce them now. From Washington, L.G. Holstein joins us. He's senior energy policy advisor to Barack Obama. He was chief of staff to the energy secretary under Bill Clinton and was assistant secretary of commerce for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. L.G. Holstein, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you, Tom. Nice to be with you.
And with us from San Francisco, James Woolsey, top energy advisor to John McCain. He was director of the CIA from 1993 to 95. He's a Vanguard Venture partner and an Annenberg Fellow at the Hoover Institution at Stanford University. Jim Woolsey, welcome back to On Point.
Good to be with you.
L.G. Holstein, first to you. Can Barack Obama still deliver on the kind of plans you were putting together for him probably a year ago and more with the economic crisis we find ourselves in the midst of now?
You bet he can, Tom, and not only can he, and we'll talk about how in just a moment, I would say that the need to do so is even greater, perhaps, than it was a year ago, and here's why. The financial crisis has put American families in a terrible bind, literally making choices between saving for education, paying for health care, or paying the light bill. And if we don't do something to get a handle on the bill, not only that America pays for the importation of over 60% of our oil, but also for all the other types of energy we use, such as electricity, we won't be able to have the economic recovery that the nation so badly needs.
Jim Woolsey, John McCain and Barack Obama have both promised a lot. John McCain very deliberately saying, let's do it all, you know, sort of soup to nuts, A to Z. Can we afford that? You know what that means in terms of the electrical grid in this country, the huge nuclear power plant construction program he's talked about, and much, much more. You see what the economy is doing. Can we afford the McCain program, Jim?
Well, the key thing is, there are two key things. One is to move away from carbon-emitting sources for electricity generation, and the other is to move us off oil. And to manage both of those transitions in a way that doesn't break the bank, but makes them decisively. And with respect to moving away from carbon-emitting sources for electricity generation, John McCain has been a leader, really, in the Senate. The first bill for mandatory cap and trade was his and Senator Lieberman's at the beginning of the decade. But he is very much in favor of a sensible and reasonable transition into that world, and that's one reason, and we can get into this in a bit. He has said he would permit a phasing in of auctioning of permits for carbon emissions, whereas Senator Obama would not. He requires outlays from the employers and companies right off the bat, which would be a very heavy, effectively a very heavy tax on them. And as far as moving toward away from oil, John McCain is very committed. It's quite clear in his speeches, and it's quite clear in the web and everything else, that he believes we have to move off oil, period, as a way of managing transportation. Oil's 97% monopoly over transportation is a big part of the problem, but we also have to manage that transition wisely. And that, in that sense, doing some drilling on the outer continental shelf can help us improve our balance of payments in the picture with the dollar and the rest as we import less oil as we move off oil. Those things are not inconsistent. You have to be able to walk and chew gum at the same time, and I think Senator Obama has some criticism of doing any of that domestic drilling on an interim basis.
Jim Wilson, let me ask you, though, how can a candidate who wants to move away from carbon emissions and away from oil make drill, baby, drill the mantra, the centerpiece of his energy program in a campaign season? There is a big transition here that the American public is going to have to come quite a distance. Is that the kind of leadership and education a president offers, drill, baby, drill, if you're moving away from oil?
Well, if you don't like the nuance of the baby, don't use it. But I don't think that policy and the program Senator McCain has announced moves us at all away from his objective of moving off oil. Look, at the end of the 19th century, salt was a strategic commodity. It was the only way to preserve meat. Countries went to war over salt mines. It was a big deal, the way oil is now. That transition took a few years to move toward electricity and freezers to replace salt for preserving meat, but we didn't stop using salt for those years as we moved toward freezers and away from salt brine. It really is sort of emotionally immature, I think, to believe that you can make these transitions immediately. You have to manage them. And John McCain is very much in favor of moving away from oil as the dominant in transportation, toward biofuels, toward electricity in particular, such as plug-in hybrids. He's made that clear time and time and time again. And to say that drilling is absolutely the centerpiece of his energy policy is just nonsense.
It's the centerpiece of his public message. I don't know how to get around that. L.G. Holstein, how would you describe the fundamental difference, if you can? There are many pieces. We'll get to as many as we can. But the fundamental difference in approach between your candidate, Barack Obama, and John McCain on energy and the environment.
I think the fundamental difference, Tom, is simply in a question of scale, in that both candidates have acknowledged the need to move us away from this oil import dependency. But Barack Obama has proposed a plan that actually gets us there. As we heard in the most recent debate, Senator McCain has called for a freeze on domestic spending. That means no more new money for research and development in order to develop those plug-in hybrid vehicles, no more new money to galvanize the research and development centers of our country, the great universities, into putting them to the task, a task equivalent to putting a man on the moon, as we did back in the 60s, to free this country from import dependence, whereas Barack Obama has laid out a plan that would get us to a point where we would back out all of our oil dependency from the Middle East and back out the oil dependency from Venezuela. Now, it's also fair to point out that in spite of Senator McCain's rhetoric, he has voted consistently against these renewable energy provisions that have come up time and again in Congress, often defeated by the Republicans. For example, as recently as 2005 and 2006, Senator McCain voted against tax incentives for renewable energy. He's voted against renewable energy mandates, that is, the, for example, biofuels mandates that require the oil companies to blend in renewable biofuels. These are the kinds of non-solutions or double talk that we're getting from Senator McCain. And instead he talks about building 40 new nuclear power plants when everyone knows that it takes about 10 years just to get a reactor vessel. It takes about 10 years, if you can get one, to build the facility, and it takes about $10 billion to do it, way out of proportion to the kind of money that we could be spending to move us toward energy independence much faster.
Keith Johnson, we're going to dig in on these issues, but top line, is it clear which package of policies at this point, given the economy, is more realistic, given the challenges in front of us?
Well, I mean, I think when you look at what the market does every day, what's happened in the last couple of weeks with the economy, I think it's kind of difficult to talk about, you know, the realistic nature or not 10 years out, you know, given the sudden zigs and zags in the economy. I mean, I think in both campaigns' energy plans, be it the, you know, $300+ billion that Senator McCain's nuclear build out would need, or the, you know, at least $150 billion for clean energy in the Obama plan. You know, I think those are both predicated on a more stable environment with, you know, without a trillion dollar deficit coming in.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about energy and the environment. And the McCain and Obama visions, Keith Johnson with The Wall Street Journal is here with us, and the top energy advisors for the McCain and Obama camps. Jim Woolsey joins us from San Francisco, energy advisor to John McCain. LG Holstein joins us from Washington, senior energy policy advisor to the Obama campaign. Jim Woolsey, and I guess LG to you too, I'm looking here at this just out yesterday from the LA Times, their big editorial on energy policy and where they're looking. They say neither Barack Obama nor John McCain has a responsible energy plan. In pandering to voters in swing states, both have backed dangerous, dirty energy sources in contradiction of their own principles. And they say, Jim Woolsey, for you, they say safe nuclear is a phrase as oxymoronic as clean coal. Now, both candidates talk about clean coal. John McCain talks a lot about nuclear. They say nuclear waste remains toxic for millenniums, and no one has figured out a sufficiently permanent way of storing it. What would John McCain do with the nuclear waste from 45 new nuclear plants?
Well, we have a storage site in Nevada, and we have other storage methods. France uses nuclear power for 80% of its electricity and stores. This is a political problem, not nearly as much a substantive problem as some people say. We have over 100 nuclear reactors running as power plants in the United States. Some of them are going to be aging, and we are in a problem with coal unless and until we can both capture and sequester the CO2 from coal-fired power plants. Coal puts CO2 into the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. So as long as you do obviously what you can with renewables, with energy efficiency, those are at the top of the list. But if you get to the point of needing new baseload electricity 24/7, nuclear does not emit CO2 in its operation. We know how to do it. What is dangerous about nuclear power, the Bush administration, I think, has crossed the line in suggesting it would help countries such as Egypt and Saudi Arabia develop nuclear power, because once in the current treaty regime, you are into nuclear power generation, you can get into the fuel cycle, that is enriching uranium and reprocessing plutonium, and come very, very close to having a nuclear weapon. That was the problem with North Korea and Iran. So we need to be very cautious about whom we export nuclear technology to. But as far as operating in this country, we've successfully for some time operated well over 100 reactors and have over 20% of our electricity now coming from nuclear power, which operates cleanly 24/7. Senator Obama has not seen the need to move in that direction. John McCain is willing to as needed.
Mr. Woolsey, the LA Times goes on to say McCain's plan to build 45 nuclear plants, which he reiterated last night, by 2030, is either disingenuous or naive because the nation's existing plants, nuclear plants, are crumbling. There will have to be decommissioned as fast as the new ones can be built, making it unlikely there'll be any net increase in nuclear power, even if that big goal could be met.
Well, I think crumbling is an exaggeration. There are aging problems with some of the plants, and there's some things that need to be repaired and modified. One can do that to some of those plants probably will have to be decommissioned, but certainly not all of them. So I think we can have a net addition, but it is, and it will be influenced substantially by what we can do with energy efficiency improvements, which John McCain's very much behind, and renewables, which he is very much behind. What we should not do is write nuclear off. We ought to be very cautious exporting it, as I said, but for operating here in the United States, we know how to do it.
L.G. Holstein, when John McCain talks about a lot more nuclear plants, Barack Obama in the debates kind of nods along with a sort of a Me Too nod. What is the Obama position on nuclear?
Well, let's talk about nuclear power, but first let's talk about something we skipped right over in that editorial, and that's clean coal. For us as a country to declare defeat, to concede that we can't use our hundreds of years worth of coal reserves, domestic, all-American jobs and coal here in the United States, and figure out a way to burn that cleanly, that's just admitting defeat, that we might as well just cash in our chips right then and there. The top scientists in the United States say, sure, we haven't figured out a way yet to do it in a cost-effective manner, but there are several technologies that look very promising, and we must devote, this is what the MIT coal study of a year or so ago said, we must devote substantial resources in research and development in order to bring forward the technologies that work so we can burn coal without having ourselves continue to pour these high carbon emissions into the atmosphere.
Can it be done, and when? Your candidate, Barack Obama and John McCain, both talk about clean coal almost as if it's a fact already, but we're far from that. The LA Times calls this a kind of pandering. They say the voters in coal-producing states like West Virginia interpret the candidate's rhetoric as an endorsement of increased mining and burning of coal with existing processes that are anything but clean.
No. I'm happy to respond directly to that.
Please
That's
do.
Absolutely
Please do.
Not true.
Please do.
The truth of the matter is that MIT, which has done an extensive volume of studies on this very question, have said that we can develop a cost-effective clean coal burning technology within 10 years. Now, what do you do in the meantime? You do energy efficiency. You do renewable energy, which, again, Senator McCain has voted against consistently, and you push the country in the direction of cleaner burning fuels and much greater efficiency with respect to the way we use energy in this country. So, for example, you mentioned earlier, or Keith did, that we're going to use have a more robust and more efficient electric grid, in which we currently lose huge amounts of the electricity through inefficiencies. These are the ways in which we can put off the need for hand over fist building of new nuclear power plants. So let's talk about nuclear, and I'll answer your question. Mm-hmm. Barack Obama totally understands that nuclear power is a major contributor to the nation's energy mix. It's about 20% of our electricity now, and it will continue to be a major part of our energy mix into the future. He does not favor closing down the nuclear power plants. He does favor extending their licenses if they otherwise meet the health and safety requirements of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. But he's absolutely opposed to this idea of Senator McCain's that in an era when we're trying to talk the Iranians and the North Koreans out of building these dangerous nuclear plants and possibly using the waste in order to make atomic weapons out of them, totally opposed to the idea of using this reprocessing technology that Senator McCain supports, which they use in France. And what's wrong with it? It produces plutonium, which is a weapons-usable material that has no business floating around in our civilian nuclear waste program. So there are many things wrong with Senator McCain's nuclear program, but that doesn't mean that Senator Obama opposes nuclear power. He understands it's part of our energy mix.
L.G. Holstein, Jim Woolsey, Keith Johnson, our listeners really want into this conversation. Let's invite them. Hank in Mooresville, Vermont. Hank, you're on the air.
Yes, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I was a Navy nuclear submariner, and I operated in a nuclear power plant there, and we ran for over 20 years without fuel needed, and billions and maybe even trillions of gallons of fuel that were saved by that. I mean, just think about all that going into the ocean or our atmosphere.
So does nuclear look good to you then, Hank, as a path for the country? Are you with McCain on that? Obama, where do you stand?
I'm with both of them. McCain was a little bit too direct and forceful about it, and because the general populace of this country are not educated in nuclear power, and Chernobyl and Three Mile Island were basically both operator errors.
Yep.
And that's the biggest problem is education. And I can tell you that the Navy people that get out can actually operate these plants very safely and conservatively because they have been educated. I mean, we did drills every day with nuclear power, you know, whether it's fire, loss of water, steam leaks, and there's a great force that can come out and operate these plants.
So you say bring it on. 45 plants by 2030 sounds good to you.
Oh, no, absolutely not. That's
why not?
That's like, well, we could try to, but that's a lot of work and a lot of where are we going to get all the uranium from is another question. Maybe we should become friends with Iran and have them make it for us.
Hank, thanks for your call. Keith Johnson, what about the fiscal realities of all those nuclear plants? Do we have the cash out there to build 45 new plants? That's a lot of money.
Well, I mean, this is one of the other issues beyond, you know, long-term storage concerns or safety concerns that's always cropped up is that right now nuclear power has some big economic question marks just because there's not a price tag on the emissions of carbon dioxide. Now, if there's a cap-and-trade plan in place, as both candidates have espoused, then coal plants become more expensive. Even natural gas plants become more expensive. Coal becomes more competitive. There's a new report out this morning from the OECD in Paris that basically says, look, if your goal is zero emissions, that makes the case right there for nuclear power. There's no concerns about uranium, et cetera. But, you know, the acid test, I think, comes, will Wall Street, will the banks put up the money? We're looking now at $9 to $10 billion per reactor. You know, Warren Buffett seems to be a little bit more keen on nuclear power now. So maybe that's a sign that the financial types, the smart money guys, are taking another look at nuclear power. But the economics have not always been so clear.
Let's go to George in Cambridge, Massachusetts. George, you're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call. I listen to On Point on a solar radio in a room that I've taken off grid for less than $200. In about an hour and a half, I'm going to go work with somebody on preparing a passive solar air heater for a demonstration that we're going to do in another couple of weeks.
Good for you.
Yeah, I've been doing this for 30 years, small-scale solar, and I am really angered by both sides because what they're not concentrating on to what we really need to do is we have to think about efficiency first. This will provide the jobs. This will provide the breathing space that we need, and it may even provide the funding if we use an energy services management model in order to fund renewables and all the other things we need to do to make the transition. There are very simple things that we can do to reduce our dependency on any kind of fuel. If we painted many of the black roofs white, that would be an enormous energy saving. We have to think about efficiency first, last, and always before we do anything else.
George, let us pick it up. Jim Woolsey, how about it? Your candidate, John McCain, mocked Barack Obama for talking about inflating automobile tires. What about the efficiency first message? Is it an important part of the McCain energy plan?
Well, the place where efficiency with existing systems can make a really big difference is in electricity use. Walmart's getting 20-30% and more reductions in existing stores and 40-50% and more in new stores just by doing very simple things. George is right. Efficiency is extremely important, and John McCain is a strong supporter of it. But we can't, just because it's extremely important doesn't mean we can stand pat and wait on everything else. Now, nuclear power plants are going to cost, but we talk about the importance of a transition for jobs from existing industry in many cases to new industry that can help us manage this transition to being less carbon emitting. Nuclear is only one of those, but it is an important one. And we're going to have to do a lot with renewables as well. John McCain has long supported renewables. What he has opposed is the kind of grab bag of tax credits, which have sort of rewarded various different lobbyists differently. He wants a generic overall encouragement to move away from carbon emissions, and he sees the key tool in that as being a mandatory cap and trade system. The mandatory cap and trade system that he has suggested lets industry move into that in an affordable way. Senator Obama does indeed have a detailed plan, and that detailed plan is extremely rigid because it requires an auction of these credits for carbon emissions from the very beginning, a total 100% auction. That will be a very expensive and very difficult tax on industry in trying to manage this transition toward cleaner methods of generating electricity at the same time we do what George says, which is push hard on energy efficiency.
L.G. Holstein, what about it? We read in the papers today European countries who have led on cap and trade, on auctioning off and apportioning rights to pollute, stepping away from that because it drives up the cost of energy, and with this economic crisis, they're getting afraid of it.
Well, the answer to that all depends on what you do with the revenue. And Senator Obama has suggested that what we ought to be doing is recycling much of that revenue back to consumers, back to families, instead of providing the kinds of tax cuts that the Republicans in Congress have pushed and President Bush have pushed, which have done things like rewarding companies for exporting American jobs overseas. Those are the kinds of changes we have to make in our tax code so that we put more of these funds back in the pockets of middle-class Americans.
But doesn't cap and trade mean higher energy prices for both manufacturers and ultimately for consumers?
Cap and trade brings about the means by which you can reduce and back out America's vulnerability to imported oil, and in that respect, it produces a net reduction in America's cost of energy. And of course, again, to get that net reduction, it's very critical that you recycle much of those funds back to the people who are paying them. And I think American industry knows, or the utility industry certainly knows, that this is something that's coming, the time for this has come, and a cap-and-trade system. We can talk more about the mechanics of that, but basically it's widely considered on all sides of the debate to be the most efficient way to bring about the reductions in carbon emissions. But the caller's point was that we need, both campaigns need to talk more about energy efficiency and renewable energy, and that's why Barack Obama has said, let's have net metering, let's have smart meters, let's have distributed generation, let's have time-of-day pricing. And yes, let's have the tax credits for solar and other renewable forms of energy that John McCain, though he says he supports, has consistently voted against.
Keith Johnson, we just got half a minute before the break. We'll come back and look at renewables. But what about cap and trade? You've seen the headlines just like us, clean green Europeans kind of dialing back on that because they're afraid of the cost.
No, absolutely. And I mean, the point about, you know, whether it's a cap and dividend or cap and invest and you put some of the auction money back in the hands of consumers is fine. The problem in Europe is more from the point of view of the businesses. You know, the Italian Prime Minister, Silvio Berlusconi, was saying yesterday, you know, we've just realized Italian businesses can't handle that extra cost. So the fear there is the businesses go elsewhere and the jobs go elsewhere. So, you know, whether it some sort of cap and rebate helps families is one thing. It's businesses that are a little bit more concerned.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about energy and the environment and the McCain and Obama visions of the American road ahead. We've got top advisors on energy to each candidate with us this hour. L.G. Holstein with us from Washington, representing the Obama camp, senior energy policy advisor there. And Jim Woolsey, former head of the CIA, now advising John McCain on energy, joining us today from San Francisco. Keith Johnson is here from the Wall Street Journal. We'll turn to renewables, but a quick question here from the website, onpointradio.org. Jim Woolsey, maybe I'll put this to you. Sarita asks, how would John McCain, or Barack Obama for that matter, make sure that oil that is drilled in the United States stays in the United States and not be exported to other countries by the oil companies? Mr. Woolsey?
Well, the key thing is not where any given barrel of oil flows, but the portion of production. For all practical purposes, since oil is relatively easily transportable, there's a one-world market in oil. And what we are doing by improving our ratio of how much is produced here at home versus how much is produced abroad is reducing the outflow. We borrow something between $400 to $700 billion a year, depending on whether oil is in the 70s or up around $140 a barrel, in order to import oil. We have something approaching this credit crisis amount of $700 billion every year that flows out to foreign countries in order for us to be able to import oil. For every $1 billion of that we replace by domestic production, we produce about 10,000 American jobs. So that is the key thing. That helps us with employment here at home, and it helps us with the balance of payments, and it helps us by not borrowing so much. It helps us hold on to the value of the dollar. Those are important objectives. They're not the total objectives, as I said before. Mm-hmm. The ultimate strategic objective is to move away from oil in toto and to move toward electricity and biofuels for transportation. But it's not any given barrel of oil that we need to hold on to. It's the proportion of domestic to foreign production, and we can improve that. We won't solve the overall problem of our oil dependence at all by doing that, but we can improve the situation with jobs. We can improve our balance of payments. We can improve our debt picture by letting those states who have decided they want to drill on their outer continental shelf. It's the technology for doing this has improved radically in the 39 years since the terrible spill at Santa Barbara. The drilling rigs and platforms in the Gulf, so many of them have been hit by hurricanes. The leakage is tiny to non-existent. The fish congregate around the drilling platform. So we can do this in an environmentally a sound way, and it's a reasonable interim measure as we move away from oil monopoly over transportation as a whole.
Let's get a call from Charlotte, North Carolina. Sure, LG, yes, please.
Yes, if I may, because it's an important question for both campaigns, and I'd like to respond, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
You asked a very straightforward question. I'm delighted to hear about how good the fishing is around the offshore platforms. Let's give you a straight answer. If Barack Obama's elected president, he believes that oil drilled in America should stay in America, and that's exactly what will happen.
But it is a world market. How do you do that? Does that make sense anymore?
I mean, it makes total sense, and here's why. America's demand for oil exceeds its production. So when you produce oil in America, the closest market, and therefore the most efficient market, is the one that's right here in America. There was a brief period of time, very brief period of time, when oil was exported, a little bit of oil was exported from Alaska to Japan, and that came to an end very quickly, and it shouldn't be restarted. The only reason that happened was there was a short-term surplus of oil on the West Coast, and they simply – it didn't make any sense to ship it all the way around to the East Coast and use it there. But we're not doing that anymore, and we shouldn't.
But what sense does that really make? I mean, it is a global market. Oil flows all over the place.
I'm sorry, Tom. Oil doesn't flow out of the United States to foreign markets, and your question was, should we allow it to do so? And this might be an important question. If we were able to produce so much oil that we had a surplus beyond what we actually need. But as was stated at the top of the program, we only have 3% of the remaining oil reserves in the entire world here in the United States. We use 25% of the oil's daily production. So that kind of tells you that no matter how ambitious we may be about drilling on public lands and offshore, off our coastlines, and Barack Obama's willing to look at those kinds of proposals. But no matter how ambitious they may be, they're not going to fundamentally change the long-term downward trend in American oil production, nor, and the Department of Energy agrees with this, nor will they reduce the price of oil or gasoline at the pump.
The key word that LG used was allow. If Senator Obama is not willing to allow trade in oil, as I read LG's remarks to suggest, that's yet another constraint put on the market that is part of Senator Obama's top-down manage the economy, very detailed plan approach toward dealing with these problems. The best thing to do, John McCain is convinced, is to give a general incentive to move away from oil by encouraging electricity and by encouraging biofuels with flexible fuel vehicles and the like, and then to let the market work in such a way as to minimize cost in the interim as we move away from oil. And same with respect to moving away from carbon-generating parts of our fuel supply for electricity. If we can, and John McCain allocates $2 billion a year to move over the next decade to do this, if we can move toward having coal able to sequester long-term the carbon from coal-fired power plants, we should do that, and we can rely then more on clean coal. But we should establish a general direction with a mandatory cap and trade system and with a breaking up of oil's monopoly over transportation and then let the market work. Senator Obama is in favor of central management. The word allow is the key word in what LG said.
We're trying to move beyond oil right here, but we've got one more question on that front. Jack in Charlotte, North Carolina. Jack, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom. I'm a fan of your show, but I'm a little disappointed this morning. I think reducing McCain's energy policy to drill, baby, drill would be the equivalent of reducing Obama's domestic policy to yes, we can. And I think you could do better than that, all right?
Jack, I hear you, but what I said was, and I stand by it, that the core message, the message that I heard chanted in the hall in St. Paul was drill, baby, drill. You heard Sarah Palin, you know, put it right in the face of Joe Biden. It's drill, baby, drill, Joe. It seems to me that there is a very big message there at a time when we've got a big public education task in front of us. Jim, I lost somebody there. Jim, are you there?
Yeah, I am. Look, I've said it. This is an important interim measure to improve our employment posture, our balance of payments, and the value of the dollar drilling domestically on the outer continental shelf. It is not the total solution. John McCain has never said it's the total solution. Some of you in the press really love to emphasize it and nothing else.
You know, I take exception to that. I was at the Republican convention.
I think your caller was right to suggest that you were saying that this is the centerpiece. It's not the centerpiece. It is an important piece of John McCain's overall energy policy.
Chanted in the hall. Sarah Palin put it right there. And just for clarity, I said of the message. Let's get a call from AJ in San Diego. AJ, you're on the air.
Tom, thanks for taking my call. The bottom line I think that voters need to take to the polls with them and beyond is this. In less than an hour's time, let's say an hour's time, the Earth receives from the sun more energy than all humanity consumes in a year. This is a fact which is incontrovertible. We need to harness only a tiny fraction of this bounty, which, by the way, the source is free.
Solar.
And we can do this. The technology exists now, off the shelf, to do this around the world. The technologies are improving daily. Read article after article, whether in the popular press or in the scientific press, new photovoltaic collectors, new means of harnessing wind energy. The wind blows, after all, because the sun shines and the Earth spins on its axis. And as far as clean coal goes, there is no such thing. Oh, well, maybe MIT wrote a paper that said we can sequester the CO2 we put out. Swell. What about the fly ash, which contains a great deal of carbon-14 and mercury, and the acquisition of that coal through what? Mountaintop removal? Or other means that are absolutely horrendous in terms of their environmental consequences? No. The bottom line is we ought not to be consuming carbon-based energy sources at all, and we need not do so. A future will look back on this time and say you had this remarkable material from which you can derive petrochemicals, fertilizers, etc., lubrications.
And you used it and you burned it.
You burned it, exactly.
Yeah. AJ, you put it very, very well, and you help us turn to renewables. LG, let me go there for a minute. Barack Obama and John McCain both talk a lot about renewables. Of course, we all know that capturing that energy and moving it around the country would require enormous new investments in the electrical grid. Now, what about the cost of that? What would be required? How does Obama look at that? Can we afford to build, essentially, you know, rebuild the entire power grid in this country to let that energy flow from massive solar farms or wind farms to where it's needed?
Well, both candidates do talk about solar and other renewable forms of energy, but one of the candidates, John McCain, consistently votes against providing the incentives and the tax incentives necessary to actually do the research and development, because while solar, particularly hot water heating, is cost-effective in many parts of the country, solar is not fully affordable everywhere in the country. And we must do the research and development, as we did in the Apollo program, put our great research centers to work on this. Which candidate will do that work? John McCain has said, notwithstanding all these things we keep hearing about how he wants to invest in this clean energy future, he says no new domestic spending on energy or any of these other areas. He wants a freeze. Senator Obama, primarily through the auctioning of the permits for carbon burning in the efficient market mechanism we described earlier, has already figured out how he would pay for the kinds of investments, $150 billion over 10 years, to make these clean, sustainable energy sources a reality for all Americans in due course. And I take exception to those who would say that we have to have some kind of war on coal. We can't give up on America's coal resources. We shouldn't give up on any of America's energy resources. And we certainly shouldn't give up on our scientific ability to figure out ways to burn all of these energy sources, create all of these energy sources in a cleaner, more sustainable way. So the new grid technologies to which you're referring, Tom, and I quickly listed them earlier, like the
smart
time
grid.
Of day pricing and smart grid, and the smart meters that figure out how you're using electricity in your house and how to give you the signals you need to cut your electric bill. These are actually relatively straightforward things. That's an area where the technology is there. How much does it cost? I met with the CEOs of several major utility companies who have told me that all of the new transmission that we need in this country in order to bring the renewable power to American homes and businesses is going to cost in the neighborhood of about $80 per ratepayer, spread out over a period of years. That's possibly an affordable proposition, especially if the government steps in to help, both with resolving some of the siting disputes that develop over building these transmission lines, as well as, and Senator Obama has supported the idea of helping the utilities with some federal matching funds, in other words, cost share the construction of these new facilities. John McCain has no plan to pay for it and has said straight out he has no intention of putting new money into any of these areas.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Let me get a call from Lake Placid, New York, and Jane. Jane, you're on the air.
Howdy, howdy. Love your show. As I understood it, during the rescue plan, there were some tack-ons in large amounts of money for renewables. Could you please have your guests comment on how each of his candidates would spend that money? And I'm thinking along the line of Nancy Pelosi's having gotten the House to pass what was the extension of these renewable credits, which we're going to sunset this fall.
Yep.
And I thank you very much. I'll take my answer up here.
Jane, thanks for your call. Keith Johnson, first to you. We heard talk of money for energy initiatives in the rescue bailout, call it what you will. How much money's in there, Keith?
Well, I mean, it depends on you know, which initiative you're talking about, because it was kind of a grab bag in the end, you know, what made it through the House and the Senate. Basically, everybody had their nose in the trough there. The one-year extension for wind power, eight-year extension, including some improved incentives for solar power, but also $1.5 billion for different kinds of clean coal. You know, the bottom line with what happened with this sort of last-minute renewal of the tax credits is that it was a little bit more of the same. One-year extension for the wind power, and that's one of the things that Senator McCain mentioned in his energy plan, is that he wants long-term predictable support for these kinds of things, which is what's been lacking in the U.S. historically. It's always kind of a roller coaster, year to year or maybe 2 years at a time, which is one of the reasons it's been such a stop-and-start industry here.
Jim Woolsey, we had to cut away there on funding for renewables. What's the McCain view?
Well, I mean, it's ridiculous to say he's not going to, that John McCain's not going to support increased R&D and using the payments for the permits for improving energy. That's, of course, what he's doing, and he said so many times. It's just flat wrong to say he's not going to. But the key thing, I think, that Keith pointed out, is that the history of these credits has been extremely, as he put it, rewarding of whoever gets his nose in the trough first. And there are a crazy patchwork of credits. They're not a systematic long-term encouragement. John McCain has voted in favor of them when he needed to keep them alive, but he has voted against them at other times in order to try to reform them. Unlike Barack Obama in his career in Illinois Senate, John McCain doesn't vote present hundreds of times. He has been in the Congress 28 years, and one has to vote on a lot of packages, which include things one supports and things that one does not. But he's a strong supporter of a smart electricity grid. Part of what you can do with a smart grid is move toward distributed generation of energy. Out here in California right now, we have energy service companies going to individuals, let's say new shopping center owners, and saying, I can supply you with electricity from your roof, and I'll put in the photovoltaic cells more cheaply than you can get it from the grid. This is coming with the distributed generation. So we may not need to build an entire new grid having only, say, solar plants in the Southwest and distributing the electricity all over the country, as seemed to be suggested by LG's comments.
Big plans on all sides and big questions as well. I want to thank all of you for being with us today. Jim Woolsey with the McCain Campaign, LG Holstein with Barack Obama, Keith Johnson at the Wall Street Journal. Thanks. This is On Point.